The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the individuals participating in the podcast. This podcast also contains subject matter which may not be suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised.
I had just gotten in off of a scholarship at this prestigious school. I was really excited because it was the next step to my future. And as we're talking about that, we get the email that our whole campus is shutting down.
I was home taking care of my son. He was sick. And I started getting these text messages from a friend who's a school nurse. And I was getting all these warnings that school's about to shut down and I should be really concerned that my son was sick. I start turning on the news and freaking out.
Citywide shutdowns, and most people felt, oh, you know, it'll be temporary.
Okay, it's happening now. Stay inside.
I had a lot of anxiety because I'm the only one going out and getting stuff for my parents. So if they got sick, I would have never been able to forgive myself for that.
I've never experienced that. Where everybody had to be inside? No, everybody. We were grounded.
That part of my life was a complete waste. I was just not doing anything. Like, I didn't even exist.
As a mother, you're watching your kids who don't quite get it. And my daughter's really social. So she was just, I just want to go down the street to see my one friend. I'm like, no.
Initially, I thought it was just another version of the flu that comes around.
Bodies were dropping at an exceptional rate. I lost an aunt during COVID. Like, it's real life for me.
Because of working in the hospital, we were able to see, like, this whole walk of a hallway of all the people that had died from it since it had started because they didn't have enough PPE to wear.
There was a lot of misinformation going around, and it was people talking like gossip. You have to social distance, and suddenly everybody is debating what 6 feet means and what washing your hands for 20 seconds means.
One of the biggest things that resonated with me over it was talking to elderly people in the nursing homes who would say they didn't ask us if we didn't want to see our loved ones. They just took that away from us. They just were told people can't come visit you.
When the focus is on winning and not the people, now you have agenda. Just give me the truth. Just give me the truth. COVID, I feel, came with so many lessons. If we don't take these lessons and adhere to them, we are doomed to repeat it.
In 2020, I was deep into investigating a new missing persons case for my podcast Up and Vanished, and still wanted to do interviews face-to-face. But it was like everything had changed overnight. We set up our interviews outside, 6 feet apart, with masks on. What used to feel relatively simple now felt like crossing a wire. Every step, every interaction, all had an extra layer of caution. It was strange, unsettling even. But I focused on the story and the next lead. Like a lot of people, I didn't question what was happening around me too much. It was new to everyone. I just kept my head down, adjusted, thinking and hoping maybe it all blow over soon. Yet, here's the thing. COVID-19 didn't just change the way we worked. It changed the way we all looked at the world. We were all facing this invisible threat, and every answer we sought just felt muddled. And I mean just some of the basic questions, like where did it come from? How did it get so bad so fast? All that death, all that fear, and trillions of dollars spent. And even now, years later, we're still left with some of those lingering questions.
Health officials believe COVID-19 originated in animals sold in a so-called wet market in China.
And why bats? How confident are you that the coronavirus came from bats?
So I'm probably 90% confident that the new coronavirus came from bats.
We turn now to the accusations that China covered up the extent of the virus outbreak early this year.
This morning, Dr. Anthony Fauci is shooting down theories that the coronavirus was man-made.
I'm not saying the Chinese released it intentionally. I'm saying there might be evidence that there was an accident. Because if that happened, we better make sure it never, ever, ever happens again.
It's a very strange thing to me that people don't want to even investigate.
So I did what I tend to do when something feels off. I started digging. And the more I looked, the more I wondered. Have we ever been told the full truth about the pandemic that reshaped our lives? And damn, why is it such a polarizing question to ask? I was scared to ask it just then. Even mentioning COVID-19 puts you in hot water somehow. Who knew we could politicize a virus so much? And to find definitive answers, you have to toss that entirely out the window. Let's talk about and focus on the facts, and let's try to find out what really happened. From Tenderfoot TV, I'm Payne Lindsay, and this is Leaked, Episode 1, Where There's Smoke.
Did you see Ms. Grinstead's body after she died?
I did.
Where did you see it?
In the pecan orchard.
Were you asked to help dispose of her body?
I was.
For years now, I've investigated missing persons cases, murders, and government cover-ups. The clip you just heard was from the trial of Ryan Duke in South Georgia, one of two arrests made for Tara Grinstead's murder in 2005. The very first podcast I ever made and the first true crime story I ever covered. Since then, having poked around many unsolved cases, sometimes things in everyday life give me this insatiable itch of curiosity. Eventually, over the years, COVID-19 became one of them, mostly because of how devastating it was, how split people were, and what we should and shouldn't do. And for all these hearings, news coverage, and public statements to not really know how it all happened, it shouldn't be that hard to figure out, right? Then before you knew it, COVID became a trigger word. And not only because of the tragedy of it all, but because people are so divided on the issue. Which honestly makes it a story I never thought about exploring until recently, when my business partner Donald took a meeting with director Jenner First. If you don't know his name, you've probably seen his work. Netflix's Murdaugh Murders and Hulu's Fire Fraud. They were talking about a podcast on updates to the Alex Murdaugh case. When Jenner mentioned something else he was working on, a documentary about COVID. He titled it, Thank You, Dr. Fauci. Donald watched it, then passed it to me. When it comes to true crime and cold cases, by nature, I'm always a little bit skeptical. COVID-19 is a story that's been picked apart 100 different ways. So I hit play. In the documentary, Jenner goes on a personal journey digging into COVID-19, not just the history of the pandemic, but all the big controversial questions, its origins, the shifting narratives, and how it became this huge divisive mess. As a journalist, some of the things he uncovered were insane. It stuck with me enough to keep talking about it afterwards. And I realized pretty quickly, the overall general consensus is that we don't know anything.
Super incredible. I mean, it was like really eye-opening. I saw a little bit about the headlines recently, with the whole lab leak thing, but man, the amount of, I guess, corruption going on and deception going on. You know, I'm surprised and I'm not surprised.
That's Mike, a producer who works closely with me.
That's so politicized that it's hard to even say, you know, and even this documentary, it's like, it feels risky because it's like, there's so much extra baggage around this topic of COVID. You can't say anything without somebody accusing you of being on one side or the other.
And that's true. Even in just exploring this story, I'm going to get accused of the same thing. And I'm not looking forward to it.
When it's all happening, I remember like seeing, oh yeah, it came from a bat. Okay, like sure, that's interesting.
And this is Liam.
I remember like 6 months in, I started seeing a few things and I was like, oh, it seems like there's some sort of cover up. But then like
the craziest part is that there were hearings.
I remember seeing Dr. Fauci go like, well, Senator Paul, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Let me finish.
You take an animal virus and you increase its transmissibility to humans.
Right.
You're saying that's not gain of function?
Yeah, that is correct. And Senator Paul, you do not know what you are talking about, quite frankly. And I want to say that.
Yeah, it's insane because when it was all going down, if you said it was a lab leak, that was a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
And you were the crazy guy with tinfoil hat.
My producer Mike made a strong point. How can we talk about COVID without sounding crazy? Can't we just ask the question, what happened? And I don't know, try to find out? Maybe we were told the truth, and every single conspiracy is just stirring the pot. But if we weren't, then there's been over 7 million lives lost from COVID. People I knew, people you knew, and there's never been any real accountability. We live in a time where separating solid facts from conjecture can sometimes feel impossible. But the real question I had was simple. What actually happened in the beginning? And why does this story feel so disjointed? So I started doing some research.
Scientists believe bats spread it to other animals in the market, which spread it to humans.
It started when Chinese authorities shut down the Hunan seafood market in Wuhan, January 2020. That's when global health authorities pointed to wet markets as the epicenter of the pandemic.
That's because a coronavirus found in bats shares 96% of its genetic sequence with COVID-19.
On March 11th, 2020, the World Health Organization declared that a new disease called COVID-19 could be officially characterized as the nightmare we've been warned about for decades, a pandemic.
There are now more than 118,000 cases in 114 countries.
4 days later, on March 15th, the United States began shutting down.
Tonight, elected officials taking unprecedented measures to keep people safe.
But 2 months after the shutdowns, in May of 2020, other theories began to surface.
The Trump administration has also linked the virus to a lab in Wuhan. Now, Dr. Anthony Fauci is addressing the issue.
Do you believe or is there evidence that SARS-CoV-2 was made in a lab in China or accidentally released from a lab in China?
If you look at the evolution of the virus in bats and what's out there now, it's very, very strongly leaning towards this could not have been artificially or deliberately manipulated, the way the mutations have naturally evolved.
And just like that, the conversation around COVID-19 wasn't about the truth, nor was it about humanity, but more or less a political battleground. Every message now under a microscope.
Right now, people should not be walking. There's no reason to be walking around with a mask.
First, it was wear a mask. Then a lot of people said don't. Hand sanitizer won't kill the virus, but still use it.
Do the things that we've been recommending. All of the recommendations from the CDC about prudence and wearing masks in indoor crowded places.
Get the shot.
If you are unvaccinated, you are very vulnerable.
Then get another shot.
And if you are vaccinated, get boosted.
Wait, don't get that one. Get this one. And maybe one more after that just to be safe. Vaccines stop the spread, right? I think we all remember vividly this political nightmare. And look, I'll be honest. I got the first COVID shot because I didn't want to get COVID again. I'd really rather keep my taste buds.
So it seems that it's extremely contagious and it's not airborne, but it is contagious.
Why do we need an experimental mandatory vaccine for a disease, by the way, which you have a 99.997% chance of surviving?
Wearing the mask literally activates your own virus.
The news cycle was exhausting. It was like trying to keep up with a story that kept rewriting itself.
You can say lockdowns are necessary and we need to protect these old people. But if I present evidence to you that's contrary, don't just shout at me that I'm an idiot.
And around us, the world.
This is a tool to keep us at home and on house arrest.
Started to unravel.
This is voluntary. I don't think I'm going to be doing it.
The wider this divide grew, the more lives were lost.
My estimate is that 200,000 Americans needlessly perished because they refused COVID vaccines.
Then, in 2022, just as suddenly as it started, it was as if it never happened. Honestly, at the time, a relief, but in hindsight, a bit puzzling.
President Biden declared the coronavirus pandemic is over during an interview on 60 Minutes this Sunday.
That's right. Raised a lot of eyebrows with just that phrase.
And here's where it gets a little weird. One of the things Jenner points out, several months before the world knew about COVID-19, groups of scientists across the world held secret meetings about a rapidly spreading respiratory virus. They needed data, time, and shared knowledge to really understand what humanity was up against and to fight back against this microscopic, terrifying thing. But we never learned about these early meetings until a record of it was submitted as evidence to a congressional subcommittee. 3 years later, here's the memo.
On February 1st, 2020,
Dr. Anthony Fauci, Dr. Francis Collins, and at least 11 other scientists convened a conference call to discuss COVID-19.
That's over a month before the World Health Organization, or WHO, declared the pandemic.
It was on this conference call that Drs. Fauci and Collins were first warned that COVID-19 may have leaked from a lab in Wuhan, China.
It sounds like important information to me. Remember, at this point, the world is just learning about this virus.
Only 3 days later, on February 4th, 2020, four participants of the conference call authored a paper entitled The Proximal Origin of SARS-CoV-2. The paper was sent to Dr. Fauci for editing and approval.
This paper has been cited by scientific institutions, journalists, politicians, all around the world, as the primary reasoning against the virus being man-made, an accidental leak from a laboratory.
The evidence available to the Select Subcommittee suggests that Dr. Anthony Fauci prompted Dr. Christian Anderson, Professor, Scripps Research, to write Proximal Origin, and that the goal was to disprove any lab leak theory.
So why would 13 scientists push so hard to disprove a lab leak before they'd even fully evaluated all the evidence? What was really discussed behind closed doors in that teleconference? Were those decisions made to protect us or something else?
All these scientists that had come together to speak with Fauci and Farrar and Collins, they write a bunch of papers that claim this couldn't have come from a lab and must have come from nature.
That's a clip from the documentary of Jenner speaking about this teleconference.
All the members of that teleconference published 33 articles.
Day after day, week after week, there was a different scientific paper.
It has the quality of a media campaign.
And it didn't stop there. He kept digging, asking who were these people? And more importantly, was anyone shut out of that conversation?
Redfield felt this outbreak may have come from a lab accident at the Wuhan Institute of Virology.
One critical voice was excluded. Dr. Robert Redfield, the CDC director at the time.
So we were talking about it, and Tony argues that my premise is wrong, that I believed it came from the lab.
The Tony he's talking about is Dr. Anthony Fauci, someone Redfield had known for decades.
It was clear the aggressive support for the wet market being the source. I thought that Tony should embrace scientific investigation, but Tony only considered a single hypothesis. It was spillover, 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 spillover.
As Redfield's voice got sidelined, Fauci began to take center stage.
I would now like to invite Dr. Anthony Fauci.
I can start off by putting it into perspective by telling you I often get asked, we have an influenza.
And when Tony spoke,
here,
I was just very shocked at how aggressive he was to try to take the leadership position on being the voice of the pandemic.
Now, I wasn't sure I was buying everything here. Some parts of this documentary leaned pretty hard into conspiracy territory, something I don't want to touch with a 10-foot pole. Conspiracies are annoying to me, mostly because they're never true. It's almost as if when something terrible happens, it's human nature to want there to be a bigger and grander, more complex explanation. But putting all the politics aside, which for an issue like this we must, I did walk away with more questions than I could stomach. Something didn't sit right. So I decided to reach out to this director myself and ask him the questions that left me uncomfortable. Maybe some new information. Or maybe learn what they'd left out.
You know, I think like every other person on the planet, the pandemic turned my life upside down and changed the way I was living, from my friendships to my family to my relationships to my business.
To my own surprise, Jenner first got back to me immediately. It was clear he was still very eager to talk about this. And like a true journalist, he was still looking into the story.
I think we all experienced those changes. I lived alone in the middle of the desert for 2 years, isolated. And I had made a conscious decision not to look at the news and not to follow what was happening on social media related to the pandemic. What's interesting is there's nothing about the content of this movie or of this story that surprises me. Based on my past reporting and making movies that involve complex corruption and conspiracies and cover-ups. So in the very beginning, when the idea that this could have come from a lab was discussed, I didn't skip a beat. I said to myself, yeah, that's very probable.
One of the first things I learned investigating unsolved cases is consciously cutting through all the noise to figure out what's actually worth chasing. You get sharp real quick. After falling down enough rabbit holes that led you nowhere, you'll never want to do that again. So I had to ask Jenner, what propelled him to do a story on this one?
I had been attached to a project right after the pandemic started that was a film about Anthony Fauci. So I already knew about his career and I knew about who he was. And yet at the same time, all the things I knew were this completely whitewashed version of his history. And the assignment that I was given was to make a film that furthered that message, that he was a hero, that the work he did in public health changed the world. And I was signed to direct this movie and the movie didn't get sold. Ironically, 4 years later, I get a call from my lawyer saying that there are these independent producers and they've raised their own personal finances because they care so much about this story. And I was intrigued, and I always entertain these type of inquiries because you never know where the next great story is going to come from. So I said, okay, it sounds interesting. What's the subject matter? And my attorney said, well, this is going to sound controversial, but they want to make a film about Anthony Fauci. And they believe in their heart of hearts that something really horrible has happened and that there hasn't been any public understanding of the depth of deception. And they believe that Fauci lied about a lot of things. And I said, okay, I don't make hit pieces. I don't do witch hunts. I'm a serious filmmaker, but I'm open-minded and I'm happy to meet with them. And so I meet with these two producers and they tell me their perspective. And I went onto the internet and I started doing some targeted searches around some of the incidents that they were referencing. And aside from masks or lockdowns or school closings, vaccine mandates, there was a story that was a lot more interesting to me that immediately got my attention. And that is that there was over 200,000 pages of emails and documents and grant proposals that showed a clear line to the United States funding research at Wuhan to create viruses that were either identical or similar to SARS-CoV-2. There had even been a grant proposal that was a blueprint for creating the virus, and that grant proposal was filed in 2018.
What seems like a mountain of scientific evidence, right there in plain sight, seemingly ignored.
And what was so amazing to me was, as someone who considered themselves an informed person because they read the New York Times, the Washington Post, I asked myself, how is it possible that this was not the biggest story in the world when this happened? And we are now 2-3 years out from these news breaks, and this isn't a topic of conversation. There's no justice, there's no accountability. And meanwhile, half of the country still believes that this man, Anthony Fauci, is a hero. And that's when I really fell down the rabbit hole. And I don't think I've ever climbed out.
Jenner First was just another concerned citizen, reading the headlines, fingers crossed, trusting the sources. But the more he looked, the less it made sense to him. Jenner himself has admitted to me, quote, my ass is on the line with this film. He's a liberal-leaning guy, fully aware that this story could be seen as ammunition for the right. And honestly, it doesn't even matter what side you're on, or if you're on a side at all. Talking about COVID-19 has become a big no-no.
When we set out to do this film, I just figured all the other streamers I had worked with in the past, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, Paramount, that they would be interested in the film because it's incredibly important and a huge subject for everyone around the world. The idea that this pandemic that changed our lives could have been prevented, and that even worse, there were things that happened as a result of the pandemic that were massively consequential to society, not just our personal lives. And we presented it to the partners and buyers that I had spoken with for almost a decade now that had released my work, work that's been seen by close to a billion people. And the response was, wow, this is really compelling. We're taking a look. We want to discuss it. But there was this nagging feeling deep down inside that they were not going to distribute this film. And as the months passed on, they all passed. And for us, it was not about the film not being worthy of being distributed. It was because it was too disruptive and potentially consequential for their business to put something like this out, and that it was too controversial on the government level. At that time, we had known about Angel. Our producers, Lewis and Scott, had a good relationship with leadership over there. And we began having a conversation, and I wish I could have gone back in time, because in the end, they were the only one who was ever going to be courageous enough to release it. And because of their platform, they put it to the users, the guild, to vote on it. And the response from the guild when we finally got to that stage was unanimous, because I think that people want to know what happened and they want to be validated that their suspicions or that their unrest or what they felt was unjust, or even further, for those who lost loved ones to the pandemic, some of which didn't even have the virus but died because the medical system was so overwhelmed or that lost their jobs, they wanted to be seen. And that, I think, is the most common experience from the pandemic. And streamers, corporations, news networks, they're not acting on behalf of the people anymore. They're acting on behalf of their sponsors. So it was an incredible blessing, and we're very grateful that they decided to release the film, and the response has been overwhelming. I think within the first week it was released, it's become number one on their platform, and that speaks volumes, and we're incredibly grateful for Angel. We are conditioned to move and focus on whatever it is we are conditioned to focus on and try our best to get through our day. And it is very disruptive to consider that everything about that world is not as it seems. And when you are faced with a reality that is so different than the one that you've been convinced is true, many people have a visceral reaction to that, and they reject concepts that challenge that reality that's been falsely created for them. And that is how big this story is. It's a story of unchecked power, which is a story of profiteering at the expense of human life, which is a story of war games. This is a story of the use of weaponry to shape the future of this planet. And what I learned from investigating it from the scientific perspective, you have all these researchers who are looking for a smoking gun. And I'm not beholden to that system of having to give you all the scientific evidence, because for me, where there's smoke, there's fire. And if there was a cover-up, they're covering something up for a reason.
I asked Jenner why he thinks our government wouldn't tell us the truth.
Why no one wants this story told. Because if you're going to be honest about what happened, you'd have to be honest about the fact that it ingratiated and gave great wealth to a lot of people, not just the obvious people, to a lot of people. So if we're going to unwind that, what happens to the voiceless many, the poor, who lost everything, who lost their loved ones? That is a crime so big that there is no liability for it. You cannot exact a damage to one individual, to 10 individuals, to a whole country. That is a level of damage for which there is no reconciliation. And that is why this story is being withheld. That is why this story is being censored, because if you were going to tell the truth, the damages are far too great to account for.
just like any other crime, you look at the first 48 hours, and with a cover-up, when you start to see unethical behavior or you start to see something questionable, that's your evidence, and that's what you have to look deeper into. So in the early days of the pandemic, when this virus was, quote, reported, which was in late December 2019, heading into 2020 as a news story. Now that is, of course, totally different than what we know about the actual facts and when this virus may have emerged. But I wanted to examine what transpired in a series of 2 to 3 weeks after that information became public. And you could go on the internet and you could see that there was a lot of questions about the genetic sequence of this virus.
The genetic sequence of a virus is like its blueprint, the exact order of tiny building blocks that make up its DNA, or RNA. This sequence tells the virus how to function, how to infect cells, and how to replicate. It's the code that makes the virus what it is.
Within the first hours of that sequence going public, there were questions that this virus was not natural. And yet, debate about that issue was completely and totally stifled. There was a lid on it. There was a level of conversation that couldn't move beyond a certain point in the scientific community. And that is the first sign that something is terribly wrong. Because science is about investigating facts, it's about empirical data, and if there is a debate about something scientific that is now censored or cannot happen, like I said, where there's smoke, there's fire. That's your first smoking gun right there. And as the days go on, more press begins to surface about potential origins and the genetic makeup of the virus. And what the world didn't know was that the director of the CDC was immediately suspicious about the origin of the virus.
The director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, as mentioned earlier, formerly Dr. Robert Redfield.
And by all accounts, that is the most prominent public health official in the United States who, on paper, is responsible for managing a pandemic. And yet somehow, when he has a conversation with Dr. Anthony Fauci, a colleague of his for 4 decades, he is met with a very confusing response from Dr. Fauci. And Fauci insists, based on Redfield's account, that this must have come from a wet market in Wuhan, even though there was little to no evidence that it came from a wet market in Wuhan. And the Chinese CDC director himself, at that point, did not believe it came from a wet market in Wuhan. And for some reason, the most prominent public health official in the United States, tasked with managing this pandemic, was locked out of conversations that were being scheduled by people who did not have the authority to manage the pandemic, many of whom were private scientists with grant dollars that flowed from Fauci and Francis Collins' agency, the NIH and the NIAID. And these scientists gathered privately, some of whom were vocal about the fact that this was a lab leak. And when those meetings concluded, that story ended. Whoever walked into that room with concerns about where this virus came from made an about-face and abandoned all of their training as a scientist to debate and investigate empirical data to publish a series of articles that said there was no evidence that this came from a lab and that any discussion about this coming from a lab was a conspiracy theory.
Let's hit this again, because it's a big deal. The head of the CDC, a clinical virologist, had serious doubts about the virus starting in a wet market, and he voiced those concerns. Then, just like that, he was cut out of the conversation. But why? Meanwhile, a small group of private scientists and government officials jumped on the call. And after that, they all came out with a unanimous story, one that wasn't agreed upon by everyone before the call. Maybe they're just that smart, and they figured it all out. But I was intrigued, and maybe even a bit skeptical. I've seen firsthand how stories get warped by PR strategists, attorney fixers, politicians, law enforcement, even our own social media. When money and power are at stake, the real story risks getting drowned out. For me, this wasn't political. I wasn't trying to lean one way or the other. I was simply just curious. And because I couldn't just Google a definitive answer, I just wanted to know what the truth was. So he offered me everything. His research, his tapes, interviews, archival footage, records. I mean, all of it. His only condition was this. When you make it to the end, let me know what you believe. I will.
COVID was immediately, in my view, probably the second most infectious virus in the history of mankind.
At the top of my list of things I wanted to know more about was Dr. Robert Redfield himself.
I mean, I got death threats. I got great scientists that gave me awards in the past that said the best thing I could do for the world was to take my own life. And I always thought what was fundamental to science was rigorous debate, open honesty, openness to different hypotheses. And it was very aggressive how this narrative was unfolding when there was clear data that the pandemic started in August, September, October. So how's the wet market the source? And the fact that when viruses enter the human species, it takes them a long time to learn how to transmit effectively in the human species. And this virus was distinctively different. How's that happen? I mean, what's going on here?
Thanks for listening to Leaked, a podcast inspired by the documentary Thank You, Dr. Fauci. If you want to see the full story, the interviews, the evidence, and more, check out the documentary streaming now on Angel Studios. Visit angel.com. Leaked is a production of Tenderfoot Labs, produced in partnership with Insight Studios, Angel Studios, and Bombadil Productions. Producers on behalf of Insight Studios are Jenna First, Louis Fenton, Scott St. John, and Arnold Rifkin. Executive producers on behalf of Tenderfoot Labs are Donald Albright, Payne Lindsay, and Alex Vespestead. Tenderfoot Labs' lead producer is Tristan Bankston. Editing by Liam Luxon. Associate editors are Miles Clark and Cameron Taggy. Coordinating producers are John Street and Jordan Foxworthy. Artwork by Where Eagles Dare. Music by Danielle First, Kyrie Mateen, and Jay Ragsdale. Mixed by Dayton Cole. For more podcasts like Leaked, search Tenderfoot TV on your favorite podcast app or visit us at tenderfoot.tv. Thanks for listening.